Nothing in this program should be considered investment advice. It is for educational purposes only. Please hit pause and read this disclaimer in full.
Pretty soon, people are going to wake up and go, you know, it's not about blue-red. It's about the people in power versus the rest of us. And guess what? You guys have f***ed it up, and we are not going to take it anymore.
The following is the audio version of a video released at peakprosperity.com. Visit peakprosperity.com to watch the video and to find other insightful content such as articles, discussion forums, and exclusive subscriber-only content.
Ladies and gentlemen, in a world where the elites in Washington are flooding our economy with trillions in what I call fake money, even fraudulent money, crashing the dollar potentially and robbing hardworking Americans blind, one man has been sounding the alarm for decades, and that's Larry Lepard. He's been on the program before. He's a battle-tested investor with over 40 years crushing it in the markets, former partner at Summit Partners, founder of Equity Management Associates, and a fierce advocate for sound money, like gold and Bitcoin. And he's the guy who predicted the big print madness. That's the title of his most recent book, The Big Print. And now he's here to break it all down again with us. Hey, welcome to Finance You, everybody. I'm your host, Chris Martinson, and welcome back, Larry. So
great
good to have you back on the program.
You, Chris, I mean, as you know, our friendship goes back decades, and I wouldn't say I've always been successful. my career's had a lot of ups and downs, and being a sound money partisan has been a very, very tough and lonely path. Now, I would say maybe until a little bit more recently, it would now appear that we're getting closer to the end game of this giant Keynesian fiat fiasco. So,
and well,
that's somewhat sad. It's satisfying, but also it's sad because the economy, you know, the country's not doing particularly well, and a lot of people are hurting, as you and I both know.
Yeah. Well, I have to confess, I'm not doing any victory dances with my gold and silver gains because I know what they mean. And I didn't want to be right, but it was obvious we were going to be right eventually. So, Larry, let's start with gold and silver. Let's start there. Gold first. Come on. Is it signaling something really massive, you know, we maybe ought to be paying more close attention to? Or has it just merely been riding the liquidity wave that's been driving equities?
There's more to it than just the liquidity wave, Chris, because it's up so much more than just the equities and the, you know, the other forms of liquid things. And, you know, Bitcoin, which is kind of a liquidity, you know, widget, I mean, that thing hasn't been going up much at all. I mean, I think what's going on with gold, there are obviously a lot of parties on the bid side, you know, just why is it going up? More buyers and sellers. Pretty obvious. We know central banks are buyers. And I think what we're starting to see is institutions and wealthy individuals and others are becoming buyers as well. And I'm sure you've been watching the press as I have as well. You know, it's now actually starting to get a label and a name. And what used to be just us fringe hard money people is now becoming, quote unquote, as JP Morgan calls it, the debasement trade, the monetary debasement trade. And so, you know, you're seeing just more people. I mean, in my most recent quarterly report, there's a statistic in there, 40% of the investment advisors in the country don't have any gold, and another 20% have less than 2% gold. So 60% of the country owns almost no gold. And the number of people that own over 5%, it's like 6%. So gold has been an ignored asset class for a bunch of years. And the federal government and their recent behavior, I think, has really tipped over the apple cart in terms of confidence in the dollar and the soundness of the monetary system. And I say that because, you know, okay, we had inflation with COVID, with the scamdemic, but, you know, Powell tamped that down by raising rates and slowing down M2 growth, and the 9% came down to 3 or 2.9 roughly. And of course, we know all these numbers are wrong, but they're directionally they're right. And then what happened is, Trump got elected and they said, we're going to balance the budget. And hey, happy days. Everyone believed it. You know, Doge is going to solve the problem. Well, guess what? Doge didn't solve the problem. You know, Elon's $2 trillion became $1, then it became maybe $100 billion. And who knows? It's not much now. The tariffs actually have brought in some revenue. The tariffs have brought in a couple hundred billion a year of revenue. The problem with that is that they turned right around, they passed the big, beautiful bill. And that increases spending by $300 or $400 billion. So on balance, you know, the deficit really hasn't shrunk. And we can get into the details, the weeds on that, because I think they're cooking the deficit numbers. But leave that aside. you know, the deficit hasn't shrunk. I think what's happening is just more and more people are realizing that in this system, as it's currently constructed politically, there's just no way out. They have to debase the currency. They just have to print money to keep the system alive and to keep it going. And so the dollar of every unit of printed money buys less in terms of goods and services. And another way of saying that is just we have inflation, or we're going to have more inflation. So I think it's just the world waking up to what, you know, us hard money folks have been screaming about for a long time. And arguably, you know, we were early, and a lot of, in some of those years, people said we were wrong. And of course, because it didn't work, we kind of were wrong. But it turns out we knew we'd eventually be right, and here we are.
Well, indeed. So I'm going to take exception, not with what you said, but the way this has all been framed. So one of the things I like to do is look at market sentiment and propaganda and nudging, because we went through this with COVID, all the nudging, right? You wouldn't want to kill grandma, would you? And all that stuff, right? So I watch this all the time. So check this out. So look at this. This is how Yahoo Finance put it yesterday. Gold sinks, Bitcoin plunges. They never say that about stocks, right? As debasement trade stumbles, right? Yeah. And they, of course, report this with glee. And then right next to it was this one. Meme stock surge as investors pile back in, right? Nice picture of donuts, right? So they just do this over and over. You see the nudging there. I'm just talking this from a linguistic standpoint, right? Yeah. Like, oh, no. And by the way, a debasement trade makes it sound like we're front running something. We've been debasing our currency since 1971.
Correct.
Obviously. Yeah. But let's carry on. One more example. And then this was just yesterday. So gold was actually up at the time, and they said die hard gold enthusiasts. Did you know that? You ever hear about the NVIDIA enthusiasts?
Yeah.
Well, gold enthusiasts hold their nerve despite plunging prices.
Plunging prices. Oh, gee. Yeah, gold really plunged from 4,400 to 4,100. It was 4,100 a week or two ago.
Markets are facing heightened uncertainty, and thoughtful portfolio management has never been more important. If your current strategy relies solely on passive investing or diversification without active oversight, it may be time to consider a different approach. At Peak Financial Investing, we connect you with experienced wealth managers who actively manage portfolios using disciplined, research-driven strategies designed to adapt to evolving market conditions. Our focus is on helping clients navigate volatility with clarity and confidence. While no investment strategy can guarantee results or eliminate risk, we believe that preparation and active management can make a meaningful difference over time. Visit peakfinancialinvesting.com to schedule a complimentary consultation and explore whether our approach aligns with your goals. I'm Dr. Chris Martinson, and I am proud to support Peak Financial Investing. This is not a guarantee of future performance, but a call to take your financial planning seriously. Again, that's peakfinancialinvesting.com. Investing, of course, involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. Past performance is not indicative of future results. Please consult with a qualified advisor before making investment decisions.
And then I just took this morning, and they said here, gold edges higher, you know, after 2 days of heavy losses. That's not edging higher.
That's a pretty good move. Yeah.
That's a pretty good move right there. So it's just constant. I just want people who are listening to be aware you are being psychologically manipulated if you live in the West, because you won't read that kind of stuff in Vietnam or China.
No. The powers that be for decades really have tried to minimize and ignore gold. I mean, you know, gold bug, which is kind of what I am. Anyone who believes in gold, you know, they called us gold bugs as though we're some kind of an insect. I mean, it's kind of a derogatory term.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, all I'm suggesting is that the constitutional form of money, Article 1, Section 8, you know, that, you know, only gold and silver can be money. That's what we should return to, right? And, my book lays this out, and I'm obviously, you know, trying to sell my book, not because I make money. You don't make much money on books, as you know, because you've written some, but because I want to spread the word and save people and protect them. And, you know, the fact is that the Keynesians have just brainwashed a lot of people, and, you know, inflation has caused enormous pain in this country. And sadly, I don't think that's going to stop. It's not going to stop until we return to a sounder monetary system. That's for sure.
Well, so this recent run-up in gold, though, so it really began in 2022.
Yes, it
approximately
did.
6 months after, I think, the stupidest thing ever done by anybody ever, which was to seize Russia's sovereign reserves in February of 22, right? Because that abrogated, that unilaterally broke, I think, the most important contract that exists out there, which is we're going to accept, we're going to be this world's reserve currency. You're going to take these obligations of ours onto your books. And, oh, at some point, we may unilaterally decide to just do away with that. So I've been tracking, like you, Larry, gold too closely for too long. And I had one chart that was just rock solid, and that was negative real interest rates inverted compared to gold. And they are just perfect little, like, just lockstep, right?
Yeah,
that broke. Yeah. That broke in 2022. So now they're saying, oh, gold enthusiasts in 2025. But I want to be clear. This has been going on for about 3 years now, hasn't it?
Yeah, correct. I mean, back then the price was $2,000. Now the price is, well, $4,400 at the peak, $4,100 today. And yeah, that was the kickoff point. And that was the point at which all of the BRICS nations said to themselves, you know what? If they can seize our reserves, how can we be buying that and keeping it as a reserve? We can't play that game anymore. And you now see, and so as you know, and you and I both know, with the petrodollar established in the 70s, which had really, you know, come out of and given us so much power as the world's reserve currency, all these countries decided, all right, we're going to just start trading in our own currencies. So, you know, the Saudis will now accept yuan for oil and rubles for oil. And you know, if they don't want to hold that currency or they don't have equal things they want to buy and exchange back from the Chinese, they can just go to the Shanghai Gold Exchange and buy gold with it instead of buying treasury bills. In the past, you know, the base layer of safe capital in the world used to be the U.S. treasury bill. It was the biggest, the best, the most liquid, and it was safe. But, you know, guess what? When you're a big, even if you're a big country, as the U.S. is, even if you have the reserve currency, as we do, although slipping fast, if you behave like an emerging country, you know, you get emerging country results, you know. It's like play stupid games, win stupid prizes, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, we confiscated the currency and then we started running deficits and then, you know, we started printing like crazy. And I mean, the examples were just, we're replete with examples. I mean, the most recent one, I'm sure you saw it. Most of your listeners probably did too. You know, we just decided, well, you know, Argentina is our friend and we don't want them to fall under China's influence and they're having trouble defending their currency peg. So, you know, we need to buy $20 billion worth of their pesos. Oops, no, it's not 20. We need to buy 40. And is the 40 going to turn into 80? Who knows? I mean, so it's just, it's really no way to run a railroad, Chris. And, you know, so that is what it is. And it's sad, but there, you know, as you've been saying for many years with your great programs and your great teaching and, you know, your whole system. And as I've been saying through my podcasts and my book, you know, the protection for the average person is to print, to own things they can't print. You know, and by the way, farms in the Berkshires are one of them. I mean, it's, you know, that's a good one, but gold's another one, silver's another one, and I think Bitcoin's an emerging one, you know, and I know some gold holders don't believe in Bitcoin, and I get it, and there, you know, there are issues and risks and volatility, but I do. I've done a lot of work on it, and I believe in it, and so, you know, I think these kinds of assets, and you don't, by the way, you don't need to be in Bitcoin to protect yourself. You'll do just fine with gold and silver, but Bitcoin, I think, has a lot more alpha. And so, you know, these are the kinds of things that people, I think, need to be made aware of. And, you know, that's, people have asked me, say, Larry, why'd you write the book? I'll tell you why I wrote the book, Chris. Maybe we did this in my last podcast. I think we talked about it, but
let's do it again.
Yeah, I'll do it again. I'm sitting in my living room with my wife. We're watching some political show, which I hate watching, but she likes watching that stuff. And blue team and red team are arguing with each other. And I, you know, I don't like either of them. I'm a libertarian. The only politician I've ever really liked is Ron Paul. Anyway, and they're arguing with each other, and they're arguing about really stupid shit, you know, pronouns, you name it, all kinds of crazy stuff. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, guys, you are arguing about the color of the drapes and the house is on fire. And the part of the house that's on fire is the monetary system. And I, you know, there are some good books out there on this stuff, but there hasn't been one written recently. And somebody needs to write a book that explains the monetary system and the Keynesian model and fiat currency in a way that an average person goes, oh, I get it. Now I see why we have inflation. Now I see why they're screwing me. And then better than that, I mean, that's the bad news. Some people said, well, Larry, you're a doomer. No, I'm not a doomer. I'm just an analyst who looks at the facts. And you know, the I'm very optimistic, and I'm very, 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 you know, positive on where we will come out on the other end of this whole transition, fourth turning. I mean, we're going to go to sound money. Things are going to be really great. But you know, we got to get there first. And so I thought, you know, somebody needs to write a book that explains this. So I started writing the book, and I used my wife as a test case. She's super smart, but she's, you know, a writer and does a lot of other stuff. And she's not monetary. I mean, it's not an econ major. And so I wrote it so that she, you know, somebody like her would understand it. And I started writing it, and she's like, well, what's this Federal Reserve thing? I don't even know what that is. So it's kind of like, all right, well, I better, you know, so I creature from Jekyll Island, I better explain it. Yeah. So I did. And so that's, you know, that was the target segment that I aimed the book at. I wanted any American or world citizen, really, but I was thinking of the American market, to be able to pick this thing up, read it, and go, oh, yeah, he's right. I get it. They're screwing us. And here's how, here's why, here's what we have to do to fight back. We got to try and elect politicians like, you know, Thomas Massey and Rand Paul and Ron Paul and people who believe in sound money, Warren Davidson, et cetera. And, you know, Cynthia Lummis. And we've got to, you know, we've got to fix the system, right? Because if we don't, inflation is going to become the new problem that lasts for decades, right?
Yeah. And I'm just looking at that double hump inflation that Torsten Slok put out.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
Right. I'll find it in a second. Yeah, yeah. But for until I find it, he's just saying, look, in the 70s, we had this, what they call double hump inflation, right? There was this big inflationary surge.
Yeah, there were three big inflationary waves. Yeah.
Yeah, like 70 to 73-ish, you know, and that was one reason. But then there was this second one that came along, and there were a variety of reasons for that, right? Some policy errors, but also an oil problem and some things. But I think this era is tracking that really carefully.
I
so these
too.
Policy errors right now, like, Powell cutting interest rates under political pressure, and I know the 2 years sort of dragging him there anyway, but cutting rates at a time when stocks were at all-time highs, gold's powering higher, Bitcoin's up there, there's all these signs of liquidity, right?
Right. Well, and the inflation hasn't gotten anywhere near his target. And by the way, that's a cooked inflation number, right?
It's very bad. It's terrible. I do believe Chapwood is a lot closer than CPI.
Correct.
Yep. Chapwood... For people listening, would suggest
government stats, as you know, John. You know John's work.
Yeah, which would suggest we're actually still in high single digits to low double digits, depending where you live, right?
And depending upon the category. I mean, I have to say, you know, one thing that kind of is a mystery to me is that oil prices and gasoline prices have actually been pretty tame. I mean, I think that might be because the economy is a lot slower than everybody thinks. You know, but food prices have obviously been highly inflationary.
Well, you know? I'm this guy. I believe that there have been shenanigans in a lot of our markets, particularly commodities, for a long time.
Yeah.
Gold and silver, I think that's just being revealed the extent. So just this last week, on Monday night, we were treated to a 4 a.m. slam down in silver, which saw 42,300,000 ounces go out in a 15-minute window, right? This flurry of paper.
Yeah.
The very next day, J.P. Morgan had to inform their Indian customers they wouldn't be able to deliver anything till maybe November. So which is it?
Yeah, right.
We have 42 million ounces in a 15-minute window, or there's none to deliver. You know, where are we in this story?
Yeah, right. And that kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, it's backward. There's all kinds of pressure on prices. I mean, the premiums for immediate delivery are very, very high. Yeah, no, you're right. There are a lot of shenanigans, and you know, they are going, these slams, as we used to call them, Mr. Slammy is going to show up from time to time because, you know, the people who are in a position to do that, the BIS and the central banks, they can go in there and create paper contracts and just overwhelm the bid stack. But I think what they're going to find is that ultimately at the end of the day, you know, it's the physical metal that counts. And, you know, I saw a very interesting statistic. Andy Schechtman had it on his site. It was very useful. That, you know, we're trading basically every day in London. They're trading all of the silver that's produced in one given year. So we produce about 800 million ounces of silver a year. Okay, that's how much gets traded in paper on the London Exchange. And the stock that they have in London, theoretically, and I'm not sure it's all really there, is 140 billion. So it's about 7% of the total, or maybe a little over that. I don't know. There was another number that said it was roughly 7% of the stock was the stock to what was, you know, the claims. And I was just like, hang on a second. You know, this sounds like musical chairs to me. I mean, everybody who thinks they own some silver might own a paper contract saying deliver silver. But if they all ask for it at the same time, there's no silver there at that price. And so So, yes, this to me has the feel of, you know, the Hunt Brothers or the 2011 run-up. And as you know, we just took out the all-time high price of 50. And if you look at the technical charts on that, I mean, I mean, Michael Oliver, who's a very good technical analyst, he thinks silver doubles or triples from here. So that puts us at 100 to 150. I don't think he's wrong. I'm not sure about the 150, but I'm pretty sure we're going to go to 100 in the next year or two. So, which, you know, the implications of that for those of us who own silver mining stocks, it's just stunning. I mean, most of these companies spend about $20 to pull an ounce of silver out of their mine. So, you know, if they're selling at 30, which is where it used to be, well, they're making 10. That's nice. 50. Well, guess what? Their profits just tripled. 100. Oh, my goodness. Right. So you can see why I'm kind of excited about some of these silver stocks.
Well, that's holding all things equal. I mean, if energy costs run away from them,
that's exactly
that could eat into that a little bit. But I found it finally after much sort of searching.
Yeah.
So for people watching at home, here we have this first inflationary wave starts about 73, peaks at 75, comes down. Yay. But this second inflationary mountain comes over here and peaks out at about 79, 1980. That's the last time silver had a big spike from the Hunt Brothers.
Right.
And so, you know, listen, it doesn't have to match. It's kind of an eerie correlation. We see these charts all the time. Sometimes they work out. Right. Not always, you know. Right. So it doesn't have to. But when I look at everything that's happening where Trump comes in, and I was pretty excited at first because we had Elon, we had Doge, we're going to finally get rid of all this schlock and, I think, frankly, anti-American spending that was happening.
Yes.
Grifts and graphs, USAID. And then they just shut the program down and said, we're not doing top-line savings. We're going to grow the bottom line. We're going to grow the economy. I'm like, okay, how are we going to do that?
Print the money to get inflationary growth.
Yeah. Right. So we're going to have that, but I think we're going to have an energy shock as well because of the AI stuff. Larry, I tracked this pretty carefully.
Yeah, isn't this something? Yes.
35% increase in electricity costs over 3 years, and that's average. If you happen to live within 50 miles of a data center, you might have seen anywhere from a 100 to a 200% increase.
Yeah. Yeah, the what's happened to the U.S. energy grid has just been criminal, and the fact that we haven't been investing in solar. I mean, you know, China's building 30 or 40, you know, or I mean, nuclear plants every year. You know, we're shutting them down. I mean, it's, you know, human well-being is, if you track human well-being for, you know, millennia, it's all driven by energy and efficient energy, right? I mean, we went from whale oil to, you know, to petroleum. We went petroleum to natural gas. We went natural gas to, you know, well, the next step really is going to be nuclear, and we haven't done it, and we need to do it, or else, you know, we're going to run out of cheap energy, and it's criminal, Chris. I mean, you know, you look at China. I put a tweet out of, I don't know, 6 months ago, 3 months ago. You know what? The average Chinese consumer is paying 5 cents a kilowatt hour. Okay.
What?
Yeah, the average American consumer is paying 14 cents a kilowatt hour. So if you're in China and you have an electric car, it costs you one third as much to drive a mile as it costs an American. And that's if you're, you know, by the way, that 14 cents, that's as if you're in a decent state with good energy policies. As
I'm
you
not.
And I both know, we live in Massachusetts, or at least in the summertime, I live in Massachusetts. I'm paying between 28 and 30 cents a kilowatt hour.
Right.
Probably are too, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So
it's punishing.
It's punishing. And it's ridiculous. I mean, it goes back to the stupid policies. I mean, you know, they were investing in their infrastructure and energy. We spent, you know, $8 trillion, you know, trying to win the Middle East so we could give it back. I mean, it's like, what? I mean, you know, the people running this
place, incoherent.
You know, the people just running the United States, it's so broken and corrupt. I mean, it just needs to be massively reformed, right?
Well, I agree. And you know, energy is the lifeblood of any economy. And if you want a spoiler alert on this whole thing, just go look at Germany right now. It's imploding massively, like the worst decline in energy intensive industry since the Great Depression.
Yes.
And you know what? Merz comes along and he's busy destroying the country. And he said, you know, we need 500 billion euros of spending to keep doing the stuff that got us here in the first place. So it's just insane.
Right.
Literally, by the definition.
Yeah, no, I mean, they are doing a lot of stupid stuff. Their immigration policies are stupid. You know, it just, I don't know. It's like, there's a part of me, you kind of wonder if the West is committing suicide. It's nuts. I mean, it really
kind of is. or is somebody help? I wonder all the time, incompetence, or is this actually an attack, right? Because it feels too coordinated sometimes for me.
It does. And I mean, certainly some of the people at the top benefit from these things they're doing that hurt the rest of us. So, yeah, I mean, look, my byline, my tagline on Twitter, and I borrowed it from Marty Bennett. We both borrowed it from the show Heroes, you know, which was Save the Cheerleader, Save the World. You have to be a little older to remember that show. And my byline is, fix the money, fix the world. I mean, it's, you know, that was back to the point of the book. I mean, they're arguing about the color of the drapes. The monetary system is on fire. We are near the end game. And it's really, really important that people wake up and pay attention to that, because the wealth transfer that's going to occur in the next 5 or 10 years from the people who own bonds to the people who own real things, it's going to just be stunning. I mean, you have to remember that in any hyperinflation, you know, there are people who are on paper extremely wealthy before the currency fails. And if the currency totally fails, and I'm not saying that's my base case, that's a little bit of my tail case, but if the currency totally fails, if you're wealthy on paper, you get wiped out. You're suddenly, one day you're rich, the next day you got nothing. And that's hard to cope with, you know. I mean, for rich people, for anybody really. And I mean, the middle class and the lower classes, in a certain sense, are protected by it, particularly if they're young and they have a working income. I mean, let's say you're a plumber. You know, your debt is your mortgage against your house. Your house is a real asset. You've got some savings, and if you put them in smart things like gold and silver, you're going to be fine. If you buy bonds, well, you're going to get wiped out on those. But at least you're young and you're a plumber, and that's a necessary skill. And when the new currency comes around, you'll just reprice in the new currency, and you'll make money, and you'll be good. But, you know, the people that are most at risk, as I see it, and again, I wrote the book for them, is the boomers. Because, you know, when you're 60, 70, 80, your ability to earn money goes down substantially. You don't have as much energy. You don't have as much intelligence. I know I don't. And so, you know, you got to be careful. And the nest egg you saved up, it's there to protect you until you know, and to protect your kids at some point. And so if you have it in the wrong place, you know, I think you're going to be hurt here in this next 5 or 10 years. And I feel like a lot of the country has it in the wrong place. I mean, you know, as you say, they're chasing meme stocks. They're chasing the Mag 7. You know, my most recent quarterly report, which, by the way, is available on my website, EMA2.com. Talked about, you know, the Mag 7 right now is trading at 48.5 times EBITDA. I'm like, what? I mean, EBITDA is earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, right? Long-term average for that number in the you know, equity market is something like 14. And, you know, 24 used to be considered really expensive. Well, that's at 45. So, you know, you're not getting a lot of value in stocks. And yet, you know, your average stock, you know, advisor has told your average retiree, you know, the stock market is the only place to be, and just buy the dip. And if you've listened to that since 2008, it's worked, right? But there will come a day. Yeah, exactly.
Not just worked, but I mean, this is tech versus the S&P 500 relative. I mean, we've never been in nosebleed territory like this. So it's basically an all in bet on tech at this point. But to your point, this is where the great financial crisis bailout came, and this was all bailouts in here. People don't remember. It's like, oh, we had 2008, then there was 2020. No. If you were paying attention, there was 2011,
yeah.
Operation Twist. We had 2013,
yeah.
Then 15, then 17, and who remembers the great repo crisis of 2019? Like, this was all
right.
Emergencies.
Yeah, money printing, yeah, and all that came as a result of money printing. I mean, that straight up line, that took the Fed's balance sheet from under a trillion from 800 billion to, at its peak, it was 9 trillion. So it did a 10 bagger. Now it's come back down because he's tightened the, you know, money a bit. And so we're in the high sixes now, I believe. But the point is, yeah, you know, look, you can make you want to make the price of anything go up. You want to make the stock market strong, print money, give it to people, let them buy the stock market. It'll go up. That's the good news. The bad news is, go to the grocery store and suddenly the hamburger that you're buying for $2 a pound is now $10 a pound. And that's the experience I know I've had in the past 10 years. So it's been brutal. And the problem is that for half the country, they don't have enough savings. They're just scraping to get by, working two or three jobs, whatever it might be. And they don't have the assets that the wealthy have. And so that's why the system is so incredibly unfair. Yet that's why the wealthy and the political class work like crazy to protect the system, because it works for them and they're robbing everybody else blind, you know? And my book lays this out chapter and verse. I mean, it's interesting, Chris. I published the book on Amazon. It's done well. I've sold 45,000 copies, which I think...
Oh, that's very good.
Yeah, I think in a book world, that's okay. It's not a, you know, blowout, but solid. And I've approached a lot of publishers, right? And, you know, occasionally I'll get a young editor who's like, oh, this is really good. I like it. But it goes up the chain of command. And, you know, it's a pretty non-consensus book. I mean, I kind of don't pull my punches with respect to the powers that be. And somewhere along the lines, kind of, you know, we kind of can't publish this.
Yeah. Well, did you hear that interview with Richard Werner?
Same story. Tucker, right? You should bring that up, right? Princess of the Yen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
Exact same story. He's got this killer book. It's number one in Japan. People love it. He brings it over here, and they're like, we can't touch this.
Yeah, we're not going to touch it because you're kind of calling bullshit on the entire system, right? And yep. So I think that's kind of the story with my book. I mean, it you know, and that's okay. I mean, I don't take it personally. It just is what it is. I mean, they've got their self-interest. I've got my self-interest, and I'm trying to protect the average guy. So, yeah.
Yep. Well, let's, I mean, this is really monumental time here. And again, I'm not excited that it's transpiring.
No dancing.
no dancing here, right? It's like that scene in The Big Short where Ben Rickards and the two guys are like, woo, we got it. And he turns around and he just rips them a new one and says, every 1% increase in unemployment leads to 40,000 suicides.
Right. Yes, you know. Just don't fucking dance. And he was right. I mean, and you know, look, I'm not happy about the pain that all this is causing people. But sadly, you know, I am not happy. I observe that in light of that pain, in light of the problems that are going on, you know, like most things, America will eventually do the right thing. We will get to addressing this. I mean, look, Secretary Bessent, I think, is kind of a bright light in the administration, and he gets it. He's a gold guy. He says there's got to be a new Bretton Woods. I just put something on my Twitter feed this morning that actually talked about the section of you know, one of the currency acts or the cryptocurrency acts that talked about maybe selling some of the gold and using it to buy Bitcoin. But it talked about the, you know, more important things. It talked about remonetizing the gold. I mean, Bessent tweeted out yesterday that this higher gold price is actually a good thing. Now, why would he say that? He would only say that if he thought that at some point in time, the U.S. owns 261.5 million ounces of gold, they're going to remark that up a lot higher and use that markup as a way to defease the debt. And so, you know, I think there are people in the administration who get it. I think Moran gets it. I think Trump gets it. I think Bessent gets it. How it's going to unfold, well, it's really, really hard to tell. There are so many moving pieces. But, you know, they know. I mean, boiled down to its essence, Chris, the problem is we've created way too much debt, and we need to devalue that debt against real things. What does that mean? Well, you know, we need to, the currency that debt is marked in, the dollar, has to fall in value against other real stuff, gold, silver, land, you know, and commodities and food. And so, and what is that? That just by its very nature, it's just inflation. So, you know, I mean, and I say to people too, you know, people say, well, where are these prices going? Like, what's going to happen? Well, I think gold could go to 10,000. I think silver could go to 100, 150. I think Bitcoin could go to $1 million. And that's the good news. Well, what's the bad news? Well, that's all that kind of is a monetary reset. The bad news is gasoline's probably going to be $12 a gallon or $15 a gallon, right? I mean, it's, you know, you take the inflation from today's level and keep compounding it. I mean, it adds up. I mean, you know, I was a teenager in the 70s, the last bout of inflation, and I pumped gas for a while. It was 25 cents a gallon at the time. You know, that's a far cry from today's $4. So, you know, so it's just as simple as that. The money is broken. And it's going to, you know, it's going to take a certain amount of political will and foresight to fix it. But I think we will fix it. I'm a bull on America, and I'm a bull on humankind. And I think, you know, there are a lot of great things going on. I mean, the technology stuff, I talk about this in my book, too. Technology stuff is changing and saving the world. I mean, here you and I are, you know, hundreds of miles apart. We're talking, we're broadcasting to thousands of people. You know, you don't need to read the New York Times, a stupid liberal rag, to figure out what the truth is anymore. You can find your own truth on the web. And, you know, and people are getting fed up with being fed the lies and the bullshit. And so, you know, pretty soon, you know, a Thomas Massie or somebody who's a sound money person is going to run for president or Congress, and they're going to get elected. They're going to win. And, you know, the Federal Reserve is going to get shut down. I mean, I know this sounds crazy, but I think it's going to happen. It's going to have to happen because the pain will be large enough to drive us in that direction. And again, I mean, I wrote the book because I really wanted to spread the word among people so that they could, you know, at the margin, they start thinking about this shit. You know, I mean, it's like, and I mean, very immodestly, Chris, I want the book to become Thomas Paine's Common Sense, right? When when the American Revolution started, you know, a lot of the country didn't know what the hell was going on, didn't really care. I mean, if you're a farmer in, you know, upstate New York, I mean, do you care if the British are ruling? I mean, you don't see the British. They're not affecting you in any way, shape, or form. So it was only like the 10% of the people near the coast where, you know, the Boston Massacre occurred, or they were saying, hey, we get to stay in your house, or we get to tax your tea, or, you know, we're going to tell you what to do and you can't, you don't have any representation. Those guys got really pissed off and said, let's go, you know, take on this empire. And so, you know, I consider the people who are in favor of sound money, you know, we're the same group. We're like, you know, you guys have cheated us and we're really pissed off. And guess what? we're gonna recruit a lot more people to our side and we're gonna bury you guys. You know, we are going to return to sound money. So that's that's kind of my dream. I don't know if we can pull it off, but you know, it's you gotta have a goal, right? And I know, absolutely. I know you're a warrior in this fight. I mean, you're a little bit more on the health side, and I appreciate everything you did for me during the COVID experience. I mean, you really opened my eyes on that. So it's just, you know, we're all kind of pushing back at this corrupt government leviathan that has kind of hurt us a lot, right? So
well, it's my view that it's impossible to have a healthy functioning society if the glue you're using to hold it together is a corrupt system of money.
Right.
And when I say it's corrupt money, everybody needs to know this. By the way, in this day and age, ignorance is a choice. People have no excuse for not understanding what's happening with their money system or how that's screwing them over at this point in time. You don't want to know that, that's fine.
All you have to do is have an internet connection, you can figure it out, right?
And a little curiosity, and understand, of course, that it's you're not only your right, but I believe your obligation as a citizen to know this stuff, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, I'm old. I'm 68. I mean, this is for my kids and grandkids. You know what I mean? At this stage, and I'm comfortable. I'm not, you know, lacking for foods, but not everybody's in my position. You know what I mean? In fact, it's sad. You go to the grocery store, you see people putting shit back because they can't afford it. It's just really sad. Yeah.
Oh, it's ridiculously expensive at this point. If you want to eat healthy.
Yeah.
Ooh, you got to put a multiplier on that on your grocery bill, right? If you want to eat, you know, good stuff. So, but when I say corrupt money, you know, most people are like, oh, what do you mean? You know, because we're down here in the trenches and we have to work for our money. But when the Federal Reserve prints money or the Treasury effectively prints money through issuing debt that then gets sort of multiplied in the banking system, that steals purchasing power from everybody.
Right.
We call it inflation, but that's a theft, right? So it's fundamentally a fraudulent, corrupt act.
Right.
That some people do this and create $1 billion, and you and I could work 10 lifetimes and never even get close to that number, right?
Right. Yeah.
It's fraudulent. So how do you then put rules around it? And, you know, the SEC will sort of admit it. You can't. I don't think you can have, if you want to have an honest, high-integrity, truth-based society, I think you have to have sound money.
Absolutely. There's just no doubt about it. And the way, you know, I don't care how good the Constitution is or what political system you have, the minute you enter, it's like religion and state. They just should be separated. Money and state should be separated. You know, fine, you need a state. And the reason you need a state is you need courts and laws. I mean, you know, look, I want to have a government because I want criminals to go to jail, you know, and I think we all, and I'd be more than willing to pay 10% of my income to have, you know, good roads and criminals in jail. But that's really, to me, kind of those are the two things that government should do. All the rest of the stuff, forget about it. And messing around with the money, oh my God, it's just been an unmitigated disaster. And they've had 20% rates, which almost bankrupted my father, and they've had 0% rates, which created a whole new class of billionaire contillionaires. So, you know, it's just, you can't make this shit up. And I'm pretty sure that 10, 20, 30, 40 years from now, you know, the history books are going to say, you know, mankind fell prey to this, you know, pedophile from England named John Maynard Keynes, and accepted his theory of why you had to continually grow the money supply to have a healthy economy to avoid the dreaded fear of deflation. And, you know, if you really think about deflation, what it is, I mean, deflation is the cost of shit getting cheaper through efficiency. And it's a really beautiful thing. I mean, would you argue against deflation in your technology, your computer, your cell phone? I mean, no, it's been fabulous. They get better and better and they're cheaper and cheaper. So what's wrong with deflation in everything else? I mean, that's the way, that's naturally what capitalism should provide, is as we get more efficient, you get more for less. But when you have an economy and a system that requires inflation, which a credit-based system does, where the money is created out of thin air and the money is only created by issuing debt, well, then by definition, you have to have inflation. And so these two things are in conflict with one another. And, you know, for quite some time, we've managed to balance them and pull it along, you know, in a messy fashion with things like 71, et cetera. But now I think we're just so far down the system, it's just too far gone. And we're going to resolve this for good. I mean, either we're going to go full commie and they're going to control everything, including the money, and it's going to be a really dystopian world, which I pray won't happen. I don't think it will happen. Or their system's going to break and collapse, and we're going to return to sound money. And my kids and grandkids and your kids and grandkids are going to live in a beautiful world that has the benefits of all this technology and you know, none of the broken stuff that we're now seeing.
Why do you think it won't happen? What's your optimism that we won't go down that dystopian digital prison CBDC path?
Because I think that there are enough people in America and in the world that think for themselves. I mean, I look at, you know, I look at the red wave. I look at the way half this country is armed. I mean, there's still the spirit of, you know, rugged independence and individualism. Now, look, I mean, if all of our generation dies out before this gets fixed, well, then it might go the wrong way, is my sense. But mm-hmm. I don't think that's likely because, Chris, we're in it right now. I mean, let's talk timing. You know, this is a fourth turning. Most people understand that model, which is to say that every 80 years, you know, you enter a period where all the rules change. The last one was World War II. The one before that was the Civil War. The one before that was the American Revolution. So we're in a fourth turning, in my view, and the subject is money. You know, sound money, and we've gone as far as we can on the fiat money train, and it has to resolve itself. And if you mark the beginning as 2008, these things typically last between 20 years and 30 years, which would take us to 2028 early ending and 2038 late ending. I mark the middle point as the likely period where it's going to end, somewhere in the 2030s. I think what will happen is we're going to have continued inflation throughout this presidency. I think tragically and sadly, some people won't get it, and the blue team will come around and offer all kinds of, you know, our handouts and goodies, and red team will win the next time. Because in a fourth turning, you know, if your life sucks, you often just say, I don't care. I want to vote out whoever's in. I'll try the other side, even if the other side has bad ideas. So then I think in 28, we'll get a blue administration, and then they'll finish the dollar off. They'll go with UBI, they'll go with stimmies, they'll go with, you know, forgiveness of all loans. They'll try and do a CBDC, all of it. And it'll be really, and inflation, the dollar will basically die. I mean, if you think inflation is bad in the next few years, when I think we'll have low double-digit inflation in the next couple of years, you know. At that point in time, we'll have, you know, 20 and 30%. I mean, the dollar will be failing. And at that point in time, what I believe will happen is somebody will rise up and say, hey, you know, this is what's going on. This explains why it's going on. And we have to reset to sound money. Now, there's some possibility this all could get short-circuited if Bessent and Trump are really bold and do this reset within this four-year window. And there's some talk that maybe they want to. I mean, as an example, Judy Shelton said that Trump told her that he would maybe like to do a gold-backed treasury bond, you know, and the 250th anniversary, July 2026, would be a good time to do it. This was reported by Andy Scheckman in conversation with Judy. So, you know, all right. I mean, I hope they do it. I pray they do it. It's the right thing to do. Will they have the political cover to do it and the guts to do it? I don't know. He's broken a lot of glass. Maybe he will, but I just don't know. Until it happens, we do not know. So, you know, that would short circuit the bad path that I've talked about. But if we go the other way, I think we have, you know, the next administration is blue, inflation gets worse, and then we're really in deep shit. But it's so obvious that, you know, the team emerges that says this is the only way we can fix it, and it's to cancel out all this debt and return to sound money.
You know what? Gold and silver are my top choices to protect my wealth against inflation and economic instability. Now, with all the monetary debasement and all these geopolitical risks going on, hedging your wealth has never been more important. I recommend that everybody own some gold and silver, physical, in your hot little hands. But what if you want to hold it elsewhere? Goldcore is an excellent choice and will rapidly and securely deliver physical gold and silver to your doorstep. But Goldcore also lets you buy and store your gold and silver in high security vaults in places like Switzerland or Singapore or the US at your choice. And for all of my followers, Goldcore will provide your first 6 months of storage for free. With Goldcore, you get the convenience of buying and selling precious metals as easily as stocks, but with the security of your metals being fully allocated and segregated, meaning they sit in a secure location on a shelf in a box with your name and your name only on it. Now, unlike your stocks, where you are actually a subordinated security entitlement claimant, something we learned during our Great Taking series, you are the one and only named owner of your metals. But just like stocks, you can still sell your metals instantly at market prices without any unnecessary delays. Need liquidity? Goldcore gives you immediate access to cash. But if you prefer physical delivery, getting them shipped to you is a mouse click away. Goldcore offers a range of investment options from gold and silver coins and bars to self-directed IRAs, again, all with fully segregated and secure storage. Take control of your financial future today with Goldcore, where investing in precious metals has never been easier, more secure, or more transparent. Remember, Peak Prosperity followers get 6 months of free storage. So sign up now at peak.fan/goldcore to secure your 6 months of free storage. Again, that's peak.fan/goldcore. Yeah, so let's take the sweep of history. So 1913, Federal Reserve is formed. John Maynard Keynes comes along with his crazy perpetual inflation ideas. That sort of all gets enshrined. It breaks in 1971.
Yes.
We get taken off the gold, the gold window slam temporarily by Nixon. We're still there. And of course, it's off to the races. Now, it's not just federal debt. People talk about $38 trillion, but can we talk about the fact that the United States has $104 trillion total debt? And that doesn't include unfunded, underfunded Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security IUs, right? So that's extra. Multiply that by some other whole number, two or three. Okay. So they did all of that. And then you know the gold history as well as I do, that they did everything they could. There was the London gold pool. Oh, yeah. There was the Washington Agreement. They did everything they could. And this is the chart. This just came up on Bloomberg, and this really caught me. Because what we're looking at here, everybody, this blue line shows the amount of gold as a percent of official global reserves was about 70% in 1980, came all the way down to 10%. It is not money, and it is just not money all the way until about 2019. And it starts creeping back up again. And I think you can see where we're going here, Larry. These two lines are going to cross. Exactly. And if we get that blue administration
I think
you talked
they
about.
They have actually crossed. I could be wrong in that. Depends. I'm not sure what data they're measuring. I've seen another chart that shows those lines almost touching one another. But yeah, I think.
Can we talk about that? Because that is like, we're not talking like, oh, there's some things happening in gold. That's seismic right there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What's happening.
Yeah, no, that's huge. I mean, look, you know, as I say, we started off the program talking about why is the gold price going up, and you know, and the reason is that everybody is coming to the consensus that they can never stop printing money. It's really that mm-hmm. simple. I mean, I've read about all the hyperinflations that have occurred, and I've talked to people who actually have lived through them. The South Americans seem to have a large number of them. People in Brazil and Argentina, and I mean, recent memory, right? Ecuador. And, you know, hyperinflations or very high inflations occur as everybody in this crack-up boom, as everybody comes to know that the government can never stop printing money and they just don't want to hold the money anymore. They get it and they immediately spend it. And of course, that's what happened in Weimar. I mean, they were, you know, their stories of how they were changing the prices between the time you sat down for dinner and the time you left the restaurant, right?
This is one of my favorite charts
great?
I came across on Twitter a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
You know, and so we're here from 1918. This is the Weimar inflation, the wheelbarrows of money and all that. And so gold rises pretty smartly from maybe one gold Deutschmark to maybe 12.
Yeah.
Over a couple of years. Oh, and then a huge correction. This must have been miserable.
Yeah.
Oh, no, gold is dead. I can hear the Yahoo Finance headlines. Oh, no. And then, it's going nowhere. And then, oh, no, it's effed right here.
Yeah.
And then, it's going to collapse. But this is a log chart. So every one of these that went from a single Deutschmark, 5 years later, it was worth $1 trillion.
Well, the Deutschmark basically became worthless. And that's a hyperinflation.
Yeah.
And then, And that, you know, sadly, Chris, that could occur. I mean, that's not, it's my tail case, but it's, I'd probably put it at a 10%. The reason I think it's a 10% is I do believe that before we get too far down, I mean, there are other people, smart people who know that, even in the government, including guys like Bessent. And before we get too far down that road, you know, I think we'll have movement to solve this problem. But we, you know, we got to go down, sadly, we got to go down the road. I mean, I don't think, I mean, like if somebody came in today and said, you know what, we're going to devalue all this debt and reset gold to $30,000 and go to a gold standard, everyone would look at them like they're crazy and say, you know, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. You can't do that. Why do you need to do that? I mean, you know, the problem will only get addressed, sadly, after inflation gets a lot worse. And so, you know, when inflation's really, really bad and it's the number one problem in the country. I mean, right now, I had this in my quarterly report as well. There's a chart that shows making ends meet is the top concern. They listed all kinds of concerns that you might have in your family, you know, I mean, yep. Health and personal safety and, you know, all these different, I mean, making ends meet was like the top by a huge measure. Just everybody's feeling the economic pinch. And sadly, if what we're describing continues and gets worse, which I think it will, that's going to become even bigger and bigger. And so, you know, as that occurs, we're going to just have to push the politicians to, you know, to reform the damn thing. I mean, that's the only way out of this mess. And so, you know, I hope and pray that, you know, we don't have to endure too much pain before they wake up and say, you know what, we got to fix it. And here's how we're going to do it. And I
think, well, I honestly don't know how to do that at this point, because on the one hand, you have to continue the inflation thing and hope that it doesn't get away from you into some hyperinflationary spiral. That's one edge of the chasm. The other edge, which is a knife edge right now, is deflation, where all of those bad debts suddenly get resolved, which is a capital D depression. And so absolutely, there's not a politician alive who's going to take that path willingly.
Well, that's
right?
Exactly right.
So
exactly right. I mean,
what would you do? I mean, what would you do? Larry, you are now Fed chair. I just anointed you. Like, is there a path? Is there any path at all that could actually rescue the dollar
so
at this point?
So it's interesting. If you go in my book, there's a chapter in there. By memory, I think it's chapter 26, but I don't know. You can find it. That I call policy response that addresses that. And I actually drafted out the statement I would give if I were president. And basically, I think, yes, I know what I would do. I would say, look, folks, we've been following the wrong inflationary model. In fact, before we started, we talked about how, you know, the notion of unlimited growth in a planet that has fixed resources, that's stupid. Mm-hmm. I mean, you just, it's ridiculous. I mean, it doesn't work. And so this Keynesian notion that we have to continually grow or else we die is wrong. What we really need is great honesty and efficiency. And, you know, fiat money does not give you either of those two things. It's dishonest and it's not efficient. And so I would say to the country, we've operated for far too long on the wrong model, and we are going to make a one-time, very painful change to that model. We are going to issue a new dollar. It's going to be backed by gold or silver or Bitcoin or some combination of all these. And 10 old dollars is equal to one new dollar. And you'll get paid back, you know, so we'll effectively have devalued all the existing outstanding debts. And by the way, we'll have devalued all of the outstanding wealth. And those people who own, you know, wealth that gets remarked in the new dollars, like silver, gold, land, you know, Bitcoin, et cetera, will be much better off than those people who don't. And on a go-forward basis, we're going to have a balanced budget amendment. And the government's not going to be even allowed to create debt. We're just going to, you know, have this fixed supply of money, and the price of gold will be the price, you know, gold will be the numeraire, or Bitcoin will be the numeraire, or some combination of the two. But we're not going to allow the Federal Reserve to control the money supply because it's not necessary. It is, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I think our kids will say, I can't believe these people who are theoretically capitalists let a committee of 12 people in Washington, D.C., the Fed board, you know, set the price of capital. I mean, that's price fixing. It doesn't work. Everyone knows that. You know, if you have price fixing, I mean, the Soviet Russia tried that, right? Fix the price of corn. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? You fix it too high, you know, and, you know, you get way too much corn. You fix it too low, you get no corn. You know, it's like it just doesn't work. So, I mean, that's what I would try to do. I mean, with respect to the Fed, I'd shut it down. I don't think we need a Federal Reserve. I really don't. I think if we were on, I mean, this is what Jackson did. He threw out the Second Bank of the United States and we were on a gold and silver standard at the time. And, you know, everyone shits on the gold and silver standard. Well, guess what? The living standards of Americans from 1789 to 1913 improved more rapidly than they ever have in the history of the world. I mean, we had real growth, real, you know, productivity, real efficiency, where, you know, the living standards were going up 6-7% a year. I mean, it was unbelievable, right? And that was all on a sound money standard. And yet the Keynesians would have you believe that the gold standard caused the depression, or the gold standard was a bad thing, or that gold is a barbarous relic, or this is all in my book. I mean, it's what you were talking about earlier. I mean, the people in the positions of power who try and control the narrative so that it benefits themselves have told us all a bunch of lies. I mean, this is what happened in COVID, right? You know, there are no decent alternative therapies like ivermectin. I mean, I was taking the horse paste right from the veterinarian, right? There are no decent alternative therapies. And the reason they told you that is because they wanted to have the emergency right to produce their poison and sell it to you and jam it down your throat. I mean, it's the same thing is true in the monetary sphere. And that's, you know, that's what's gone on. And like I say, I mean, you know, the Fed employs thousands of PhD economists who tell them what they want to hear about how, you know, they should be setting the price of money. And they're just all dead ass wrong. They're all doing useless work. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, I love this idea. Say if the Treasury said, hey, the Federal Reserve, appreciate what you're up to, but you're a private cartel. You serve people and serve interests. We're going to start issuing Treasury money directly. It's a gold-backed bond. It's whatever. Right. But it's and now we have what capitalism thrives on, which is competition.
Exactly.
And if I get to choose, and you, Larry, you know, you're going to pay me for some service I've provided, I'm going to choose the gold-backed thing. And everybody's just going to get rid of their Federal Reserve notes until the Federal Reserve straightens up and flies right and treats their product like it's got real competition and it has to be believable.
Exactly. And as the way they're constructed, they can't and won't do that. And so they'll fail. And that'll be a beautiful day. I mean, that'll be a really beautiful day.
Well, it'll be really painful, though, and I do worry that a lot of people are going to get hurt.
That is right, and I do too. But all we can do is all we can do. I mean, I didn't set up the Fed in 1913. Neither did you. You know, I didn't temporarily go off the gold standard in 1971. Neither did you. You know, I mean, we're just subjects in this grand experiment, and all we can do is, you know, we have our voices and we have our beliefs. And we mm-hmm. communicate, and you're doing a great job with your work and your channel and your books and, you know, your whole program. And, you know, my small contribution to the effort was to write my book because I felt like somebody needed to explain it to the average person. And, you know, I mean, the one thing we do have in our favor, Chris, that makes me think we'll win. You asked earlier, you said, what makes you sure we'll win? It won't go all dystopian. Well, one, I just tend to be somewhat spiritual, and I think in the end there is a God or a higher power that is looking out for us. And I look at the arc of human history, and we've always ultimately gone in the right direction, which is not to say there have been some ugly chapters along the way. And we've also got them vastly outnumbered. That's a really powerful thing. There's power in numbers. And so, you know, the people who benefit from this system, it's a small number. You know, the people who are being screwed by the system, there are lots of us, right? So, you know, I don't like their odds, right? I mean, now, you know, they've tried to gaslight us, and they've lied to us, and they've kept us stupid and fighting with each other over stupid shit like blue-red, right? Yep. And all those things have allowed them to maintain their power. But guess what? You know, pretty soon people are going to wake up and go, you know, it's not about blue-red. It's about the people in power versus the rest of us. And guess what? You guys have fucked it up, and we are not going to take it anymore. You know. And
yeah.
That's why I'm optimistic.
Well, I love that optimism. I think it will sort itself out. I mean, the framing I've been using for a while is it's basically good versus evil, which is up down. It's not left versus right anymore, which has a spiritual component to it. And I kind of came to that slowly, but then all at once when I realized that evil was the best descriptor I could find for what these people were doing.
I agree.
Because evil just likes to destroy things. It likes to decay things. It tears things down really effortlessly. It doesn't know how to build.
It only cares about itself, too. It doesn't care about the greater humanity, right?
Right. Yeah. And that explains what I saw in the healthcare space, the finance space, this space, all that. Okay, so, but given that, the pendulum doth swing back and forth. Right now, I think you were recently talking about and writing about this crack-up boom, equities just, you know, magically, effortlessly powering higher. Not my first bubble, so I know what I'm looking at. But I'm wondering, in your mind, can we talk about potential pins? And I'd like to, I think what I'm seeing in Japan is a potential pin.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What are you seeing there?
Oh, there are a lot of pins. I mean, you may be more aware of the Japan situation than I am. I know their 30-year bond is fading. I know they're starting to have inflation. I mean, they've got more debt to GDP than anybody else in the world, although they've got a closed economy and they do run surpluses in the government and in their trade deficit. So the U.S. is in a worse economic position. They also have a large savings culture. Yeah, you know, what do I see as pins? Oh, I mean, they're laying around all over the place. I mean, the government, you know, the stock market, the chart you showed earlier about how overvalued it is. I mean, look, having stocks go up has almost become part of national policy. My book talks about it, how Greenspan kind of first realized that, you know what, I can do whatever I want. As long as I get the stock market higher, everybody's happy. So I'm just going to, you know, whenever things aren't going well, I'm just going to pour more whiskey in the jar. So I think the stock market bursting is a potential pin. I think AI, you know, starting to replace jobs and having more people unemployed. I mean, you know, AI works against, AI is deflationary, and it works against a system that requires inflation. I mean, everybody whose job gets replaced by AI, I mean, they're going to have a mortgage, they're going to have a car payment. What are they going to do? Well, again, the government's probably going to have to send them a check. You know, I mean, I found it interesting. I mean, wasn't it interesting that, you know, in spite of running enormous deficits, when we started to get this additional income from the tariffs, Trump's first instinct was, well, maybe we should do some stimmy checks for the lower income Americans who are hurting. I understand it. I mean, lower income Americans really are hurting. But good God, man, we haven't even come close to balancing the budget. And you're talking about sending out more stimmy checks? I mean, so I don't really know. I mean, to me, it is an incredibly fragile situation that kind of reminds me from what I've read in history of the 1929 situation. And I'm not suggesting we're going to have that kind of a crash, but, you know, when you use debt to fuel consumption and you pull it forward and eventually the debt can't be supported, I mean, you know, as you point out, things can collapse. And I mean, and it's so funny, like the housing market, right? You know, the story was the housing market could never collapse. Well, in modern times, it hadn't. But I had a grandfather who, you know, the house he wanted to buy in 1929 cost $30,000. He couldn't afford it. In 1933, he bought it for $10,000. So, you know, it went down 66%, you know, during the Depression because everybody and their brother was scrambling for cash. And now, you know, that could and should happen again based on the credit and debt structure we built up. The difference this time is that we have a man named Bernanke who gave the helicopter speech, which says we have a technology called a printing press, and the Federal Reserve has literally vowed that they will never let deflation happen again. And, you know, translating that, that means they will print whatever amount of money is necessary to prevent a deflationary collapse. Okay, that's fine. Print the money, guys. But the question then becomes, what's the value of that money? You know, what's the underlying value of that money? Because Parker Brothers can also print Monopoly money, and you can buy as many Monopoly sets as you want. And if that bought real stuff, you know, you'd be rich with your Monopoly money. But, you know, as we all know, one of the critical values of money is that it be somewhat scarce, you know, and limited in supply. And, fiat is really proving that, you know, it's always been not scarce, and it's getting increasingly so. And that's, again, the point I think is very important. I'm sure most of your listeners already know this, Chris, but just it's getting worse. You know, we're compounding. We've added $11 trillion in debt in 10 years. I mean, we just crossed the $38 trillion level. I mean, we'll be at $50 trillion before you blink an eye. Do you know what I mean? And so, you know,
that we know about, because I'd love to get your take on this. I'm a little conspiratorial, but Elon Musk is doing his Doge stuff. And then he has this remarkable 1-minute interview where he says, hey, we found magic money machines inside the U.S. government, not inside the Federal Reserve. They found servers that were emitting payments. Right.
Wow.
And she said they found 14 of them, right? Wow. They were scattered. There was one at HHS. There's one in Treasury. There's 11 in the wow. DOD. So he said they found these servers that were just emitting payments, right? Wow. And when he says magic money machine, now this is a guy who started PayPal, so he presumably understands reconciliations and balance of payments. He's probably not a dummy, you know? But he basically said these things, he said it flat out, these are machines that create money when they emit the check. Which wow. means it's not T reconciling on the back end somewhere. Now, maybe he misspoke, but he got canned very shortly after that. And then just this last week, did you hear that they suddenly discovered that the Cayman Islands had $1.7 trillion of treasuries? Whoops, where did...
Yeah, I get it.
I'm a little suspicious about that. Is it possible that somebody's offshoring and buying debt?
I'm with you on the conspiracy theorist. I mean, remember, you know... I mean, in the Pentagon, remember when the Pentagon had like a $2.6 billion overrun?
Trillion.
They couldn't account for where it went. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, so, and we know that in suppressing gold and silver, you know, they had Cayman Islands accounts, and they just, I mean, when you've got a printing press, I mean, why? And thinking about how dishonest the U.S. government has been, do we mm-hmm. really think they wouldn't use that printing press to just create money that's somehow off the books? I mean, I know from talking to people in the military, I mean, they were shipping pallets of $100 bills over to the Middle East to bribe warlords and do other things. I mean, were those really being accounted for? I don't know. I mean, I would guess not, right? I mean, so yeah, there's, I mean, and if you look at some of the older executive orders, you know, that talk about how they don't have to disclose certain things if it's in, quote unquote, the national security interest, right? Well, you know, if you think the price of gold could represent a threat to the dollar and you've got to print a bunch of dollars to sell short gold and you've got to fund the account that does that in the Cayman Islands with those dollars and absorb the losses and it's all off the balance sheet or off the books, I mean, is that sound possible to you? It sure does sound possible to me, right?
It's national security, right? You can justify anything.
National security. I mean, and here's another good one, Chris. I love this one. So Trump comes in and Bazant comes in and they're like, hey, you know what? Gold standard is a good thing. We're going to audit Fort Knox, right? I mean, this is like this is like the Epstein list, right? And, yep. And you know, somebody obviously pulled them aside and said, sir, we got to talk a little bit about this Fort Knox idea because... And I know most of the monetary people in the country and the world. I mean, I know a lot of them. I know a guy in London who, very old school monetary guy, used to work for Chase Manhattan, worked for David Rockefeller. This guy knew people who were in the Johnson Treasury department. So this is in the 1960s, okay? And he said he had direct conversations with people who worked for Johnson in Johnson's Treasury department who said, when the London Gold Pool was playing out from 63 to 68, Johnson got suckered into sending gold to London from Fort Knox to help with the gold pool. And they didn't record it. They didn't announce it. It was all under the table. And then when it didn't come back, Johnson just lost his shit, just went absolute ape shit. And that's part of the reason why he did the acts he did surrounding silver at the time. And so, you know, look, is there gold in Fort Knox? Obviously, because Bessent took his, you know, hooker wife down there, you know, and had the pictures of him standing with the gold. But, you know, is all the gold that we believe there?
Wait, you meant Mnuchin, right?
Or, I'm sorry. Yeah, Mnuchin. That's who I meant. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who did I say?
You said Bessent.
Oh, I said Bessent. Yeah, no, I didn't mean Bessent. No, Bessent's gay.
Yes.
Yeah, I went Mnuchin. Yeah, took his hooker wife down. And, you know, and so yeah, Fort Knox is compromised. There's just no doubt. In fact, there are some smart monetary guys. Vince Lancey is one of them. He's on Twitter quite a bit. He's a very strong believer that actually the bid in gold right now is actually the U.S. government trying to refill its coffers. And it does sound logical. I mean, there were some huge shipments out of London and Switzerland back to the U.S. And so, you know, and I mean, one of the Trump boys has done some ads for gold and talked about how much his dad loves gold. And so, you know, and you've got, you know, you've got Lutnick, who's a Bitcoiner. You've got, you know, Moran, who's a Bitcoiner. And you've got Trump, who's, you know, supported Bitcoin and so forth. I mean, you've got people in there who I think are aware of these issues. And, you know, I mean, I'm extremely hopeful. I mean, this recent Bessent comment just has me really, really intrigued. When he said the price of gold going up is a good thing, I was like, whoa. Because he knows he's got to remark the debt against something. And the only choices are gold and Bitcoin. And Bitcoin's not big enough yet. So he's really got to do it against gold. And, You know, so as Luke Roman, the great macro analyst, lays out, I mean, you know, we could wake up one morning and the government could say we're returning to a gold standard and the reference price is $20,000 and we stand ready to buy or sell, you know, gold and silver at that price. And
well, and let's talk about that, because to be clear, it's at 4,100 as of right now. Math in my head, assuming those 261 million ounces actually are there in the Fort Knox system, that's only $1 trillion ish.
Well, that's right.
That's
right.
six months of deficit spending right now.
Every $4,000 in the price of gold brings you in $1 trillion. So you'd have to go up to, you know, to start making a real dent in the debt, you'd have to go to $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, you know, $1,000 an ounce. I mean, I think there's another, in my book, I have this chart as well. It's really good work. It was done by Brent Johnson, a friend of mine who runs Santiago Capital. You know, he went through and he looked at what it would take to cover the entire U.S. monetary base. What price of gold would allow the U.S., you know, gold held, assuming we have it, to cover the U.S. monetary base? He came up, and this was a while ago, it's a couple of years ago, so it's out of date because we've spent more since then. But it was $90,000 an ounce. So $90,000 is a long way from $4,100. So, which, and all that, I mean, and I'm not saying we're going to 90,000. I'm not calling for that as a prediction. What I'm saying is we printed a lot of money. And if we want to return to a sound money standard, there is going to be an enormous, I mean, enormous adjustment of the price of sound money as compared to the price of fiat, such that those people who own fiat are almost going to feel like they got completely wiped out. I mean, you know, imagine having $1 million in treasury bonds, and after this whole reset is over, it buys you the equivalent of $50,000, you know, it'll buy you a $50,000 car. And in turn, you know, imagine having $10,000 in gold, and after this whole reset, it buys you the equivalent of $100,000 worth of stuff because it's gone up 10x. I mean, you know, gold at 10,000 to me is just falling off a log. And, you know, where it goes, we just don't know. There's so many moving pieces and they keep printing money, so the numbers always keep getting bigger. But I do know, I mean, I have in a fund, I have investors, I have people I talk to. A lot of people, gosh, sorry, I can't buy it. It's gone up so much. It's a double from 2000. I'm like, no. You don't use this price bias. You got to think about the bigger issue of how much fiat is there, how much gold is there. We're still very, very much in the undervalued camp if you look historically over a 100-year time frame.
Today's markets are more volatile than ever. With ongoing economic and geopolitical uncertainty, navigating such environments requires thoughtful, adaptive strategies, not a one-size-fits-all approach. At Peak Financial Investing, our registered investment advisory firm connects clients with experienced wealth managers who focus on active portfolio management. These professionals use evidence-based strategies designed to respond to changing conditions, not outdated formulas, but customized approaches grounded in research, discipline, and risk awareness. We believe in open, informed conversations, including discussing tools like precious metals and diversification as part of a broader financial strategy. Every investor's situation is unique, and our advisors tailor their guidance accordingly. Visit peakfinancialinvesting.com today to schedule your free consultation and explore how proactive management can support your financial goals. I'm Dr. Chris Martinson, proud to work with Peak Financial Investing, and my support reflects my professional views. I encourage you to take control of your financial future by making informed decisions. Yeah, I've done some quick math, and I you know, people like, oh, gold's overbought, it's too high. I'm like, no, it's badly underowned.
Yeah.
Because it's still under, it's about 1%, maybe 2% of total wealth held right by the top 10% of families. They have about $100 trillion of investable financial assets. So if they wanted to just move 5% into gold, which I think would be irresponsible, I think they should be at a higher number. Not financial advice, but just sort of a directional educational comment there. But okay, that's $5 trillion. How big is the total investable U.S. gold market? Well, it's about $1 trillion right now, right? Because the Fort Knox stuff is not for sale.
Yeah.
It's actually
a little bigger than that, Chris. Let me correct you on that. So if you take all the, so there are probably between 180,000 and 200,000 tons in the world, and it's hard to tell because the records go back quite some time, and some of it's been lost in shipwrecks. But pick the midpoint of that 190,000 tons. If you multiply that time today's price, I think you come up around $27 trillion worth of gold in the world. But, and this is a big but, probably 7 or 8 of that is in museums and antiquities. So, you know, you're not going to, we're not going into all the museums of the world and melting down, you know, the Egyptian masks that are made of gold, right? So that's untouchable. And then probably of the balance, let's say there's 20 trillion of balance, probably 10 of that is around a woman's neck somewhere in the US or India or China or whatever, which is available for sale eventually. Don't get me wrong. If gold goes to 100,000 an ounce, I'm guessing there's some people who are going to sell their jewelry to melt it down and get money. But if you want to take the bars and coins, which I consider to be what I call investable bullion, you know, it's probably $10 trillion today is kind of my number. So that's a pretty small number.
Yeah, I was making a comment, Larry, that how much was available in the U.S.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, it's much smaller.
Because I feel like once the great gold repricing starts happening, you're going to find, it's not leaving China. That was a one-way
trip.
I totally
agree. Right. Yeah, no, that's you make a very good point. Because and by the way, I mean, most people listening already know this. The Chinese say they've got a couple thousand tons of gold. We say we've got 8,000. The Chinese have multiples of that. I mean, they have an export law. Any gold mined in China can't leave the country. That's law. And we can see the records. Most of the gold in the world gets refined in Switzerland. Not all of it, but a lot of it does. And most of the gold in the world makes its way through London or Switzerland at some point in time. And we can see the shipment records from London and Switzerland over the last 20 years. China, in my estimation, probably has, you know, 15 to 25,000 tons of gold, which is more than the U.S. allegedly has at 8,300. So, there's not that much gold out there, and it's very, very rare. And compared to fiat stuff, I mean, there's a great chart one of the Bitcoin guys did called Jesse Meyer did it, and it shows total financial investable assets in the world, and this includes real estate now, so this has housing and commercial real estate, is about $900 trillion. So that's, you know, call bonds a couple hundred trillion, stocks a couple hundred trillion, gold 27 trillion, Bitcoin 2 trillion, very small, and real estate's about 450 trillion. Okay, so that's all what people would consider to be things that they invest in. So the gold market, you know, as you point out, in the U.S. it might be one, is worldwide available maybe 10. But, you know, if that nine, I mean, 10 over 900, I mean, it's barely a percent. Do you know what I mean? And so if some piece of that 900 says, you know, like the bond market, for example, there's a $200 trillion bond market in the world. Okay. Well, someday those guys are going to wake up and go, you know what? Yeah, you guys are going to pay me back my principal, but it's not going to buy shit. I don't want these bonds anymore, right? You know, some of that 200 is going to come chasing that 10, you know, or if you really want to get excited, some of that 200 is going to come chasing, and you believe in Bitcoin, chasing that 2 trillion of Bitcoin. Gosh, you know, Bitcoin could go up a couple X from here easily. So, you know, it's definitely, you know, it's definitely a shift that's taking place. And it's very obvious and very easy to see. And I have a great deal of confidence that it's happening. But, you know, as you showed in that chart, I mean, there'll be swings. I mean, we'll go to 4,400, then we'll, you know, gold plunges.
Yes. Oh, no.
Oh, no. Right? Gold's going down. And, you know, yeah. We're at 4,100 right now. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me at all if gold went to 3,500. Not at all. It's extended. But at 3,500, it'd be a screaming buy, because I feel like in a year or two, it'll be 5 or 6. So,
yep. You know, you are here on this chart. But so I'd love to get your take on this, because inflation is a monetary phenomenon, Milton Friedman, right? And I believe in that. And so we're going to have inflation. That's baked in the cake. There's nothing we can do about that. Deficit spending, all of that. Martin Armstrong says that when you get to a hyperinflation, it's when there's a comprehensive loss of faith.
Correct.
In the government's ability to do anything other than be feckless and continue doing what they do, right? So it's a faith issue. So those are harder to call, because I can run numbers and I can get a pretty close guess as to what we're going to have for inflation based on what I'm seeing. I can't call this other one, because I don't know what's going to cause people to suddenly wake up one day and think like you and me. Because let's be clear, if the top 10% of families suddenly woke up with your mindset, I think we get this chart, you know, by the end of the year.
I think that's probably right. I mean, I think all we can do is observe the slope of the line. And, you know, I mean, I remember back in 79, 80 when it was doing it, a lot of people thought the dollar was going to fail. But, you know, Volcker had a lot more space, because debt was only 35% of GDP, and he was willing to take rates to 20%. And so, you know, he, quote unquote, saved the dollar, which is why he's such a hero to many people, not to me. But what he should have done Well, he was really a goat because he was at the table in 71. And what they should have done is let gold price float rather than go off the gold standard. They should have just devalued the dollar downward in gold terms. But that's a very tricky thing. I mean, it's like, one day the Silicon Valley Bank was a very sound bank. There were no problems, right? And then, they sold some bonds and there was a big discount on the bonds. And some sharp penciled analyst did the math and said, oh my goodness, they got a lot of these bonds and they took a loss on this amount. And if you run that through on the, oh my God, you know what? I don't think this bank is solvent anymore. And he called up a few of his venture capital friends in the Valley, and they kind of called each other and they said, this bank is in trouble. And in one day, $46 trillion flew out of that bank. I mean, it was like almost half the deposits in one day. I mean, this was the Bedford Savings and Loan, Jimmy Stewart on steroids, right? I mean, and so... we live in a very, very interconnected world, and everybody knows everything instantly and can get online and learn. And so, and Jim Rickards has done some great, kind of game theory on this. I mean, we could wake up one morning. What would you do if you woke up one morning and suddenly the gold price was $8,000 an ounce? And you said, okay, that's not good. Maybe I'll buy some. And you went to your coin dealer and said, I can't get you any. There's none for sale, and it'd be like, oh, shit. Well, what's the Bitcoin price? Well, the Bitcoin's at 400. Oh, well, it used to be at 100. I know, and you could buy that, but do you really want to pay 4x what it was a week ago? I mean, that would tell you the currency is failing, that everybody has kind of decided. I mean, it goes to the suddenly then gradually thing. I mean, there are a lot of great models for this. It's kind of criticality of systems. I know you know this because you're, a PhD in this shit. But, it's like an avalanche, right? I mean, the cornice keeps getting bigger. It keeps snowing. Nothing happens. Boom! It releases. It all comes down, right? You're in a theater. You smell a little smoke. Ah, it's nothing. One guy's just having a cigarette. No, smell more smoke. Oh shit! There's a lot of smoke in here. This place is on fire. We got to get the fuck out of here now, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of the model. You're on the Titanic, right? Well, we hit an iceberg. It's not really a big deal. We'll be fine. This ship can't sink. Well, yeah, it can. And so. I think this fiat system shares the characteristics of those other three models I described. And I tell you what, if that's the case, when you're looking at price, if I'm right about that logic, does it matter what you paid for your price in the lifeboat on the Titanic? I mean, okay, so I bought gold at 300, I bought it 1,000, I bought it 2,000, I paid 3,000 for some, not that far back. Today it's 4,100 to you. Do you want it or don't you? Stay in fiat or buy the seat. I mean, that's kind of the model I look at, right? Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen. And I don't want to be accused of being a doom merchant. Okay, I'm just doing an analysis. I'm just looking at history and thinking. I mean, sometimes these patterns repeat themselves, and so. Hey, do you take all your money and put it in gold and silver or Bitcoin? Probably not. Do you have zero in this inflation hedge in a world where the monetary authorities are out of control? That's a really bad idea, in my opinion. That is investment advice. I'm willing to say that on the record, right? And so then you got to just decide, okay, there's a long way between zero and 100%. Here's a guy, Ray Dalio, right? Super successful investor, one of the best hedge fund managers ever, built Bridgewater Associates. And he's saying he thinks most people should have 20% of their investable assets allocated to gold or Bitcoin, because he sees a monetary accident coming. I mean, he's not a stupid man, and he's willing to say it publicly. And so, I think when you start hearing this from a lot of really good investors, Paul Tudor Jones, another brilliant hedge fund manager, self-made billionaire based on watching markets his entire life. Same story. Sound money is a really important issue. Gold and Bitcoin are the leaders in that category, right? So, yep. I'm just out here trying to scream at the masses and say, hey, guys, wake up, wake up, because I know, if all this happens, I don't want anybody to say, hey, how come you didn't tell us about this, right?
I just want to build on what you said there, because I also bought gold at 300 and 500 and 800. I've been buying all the way along, right? And so somebody says, gosh, I don't know, it's too high. I said, every single time I bought gold, it was a difficult decision.
Right.
People look back and they go, oh, well, that was an easier decision to make at 2000. Like, no, it wasn't.
It wasn't.
Same decision you're facing today. Just
exactly.
As hard.
I remember it
every time.
I dipped down to 600 and I bought some. I thought, God, I hope I'm doing the right thing here. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
looking backwards, it's like, duh. Yeah. It's hard, though. Yep. I mean, it's, you know, you got, I mean, these short-term moves throw people off the long-term scent. And that's that makes it difficult. It does make it difficult.
Yep. Well, and I want to reinforce, we started at the beginning, and as we close, get towards the end here, but I just want to reinforce for people, right now, gold at this moment of this taping is up $93. And so let's count how many articles we now have on the front page of Yahoo Finance talking about gold. Oh, none. There's zero.
Yeah.
There's sins of omission and commission. They just omit. They just don't. We just forgot to talk. Like if it was down, they'd have articles all over it and gold bugs. And
well, the thing to keep in mind there, there's another explanation for that, Chris, in my view, on Wall Street and CNBC and all those guys. They just don't make any money buying and selling gold. They make money buying and selling stocks. And those are the people who sell stocks, advertise on their networks, and they're very much driven by their business model. And therefore, you're just never going to see, you know, them being supportive of this alternative. It just doesn't happen. And that's just, it's as simple as, you know, their salary depends on not being that way. So
I get it. But I just want to alert people that if you are subconsciously absorbing sins of commission and omission, it will take you off the scent.
Absolutely.
You know, and somebody wants you off the scent because they don't make money at it. I get it.
It's just not easy. I mean, it's difficult. It's difficult when you're being lied to about everything. But here's the thing. Sites like yours, sites like Tucker, sites like, you know, Rogan, all kinds of websites, Zero Hedge, you name it. I mean, thousands and thousands of people are coming out and exposing the lies that are inherent within the system. I mean, Trump, I mean, Bobby Kennedy, I mean, you name it. There are a lot of people who are calling out the bullshit. And as you said, I thought you said something earlier in the conversation that was really important, which is there's no excuse for not being educated about what's going on today. I mean, you can take college courses online. You can get so much information online for free. And all you need is a computer and an internet hookup, and most people can afford that. And so, you know, you have to self-educate. You know, and it's like the Darwin Awards. I mean, you know, self-educate or else, you know, your progeny are not going to be as well off as they should be.
Well, I don't really take the greed fear angle as much either, but I do think that I'm clear about this, Larry. We're at one of those moments in history where great fortunes will be made and lost.
I think that's
right. And when the dust settles, some people will be standing relatively, you know, unscathed or well off or relatively well off, and other people are going to wonder what the F happened and how they missed it.
I think that's right. I feel the same way, and I don't want to be dancing. I mean, and I wouldn't wish what I think is coming for the world. I really wouldn't wish upon the world. But you know, I didn't set up the system. I didn't form the Federal Reserve. I didn't, you know, I wasn't John Maynard Keynes. I wasn't Richard Nixon. I mean, I'm just an American who, you know, lived in what's a great country in so many respects, but I've seen it kind of go down the wrong path. And I'm pleased that there are some politicians who are trying to put it back in the right direction. But you know, it feels a little bit like too little too late, and particularly on the monetary front. And therefore, I think we're going to have to go through a real forged in crisis kind of situation. But the good news is that once we do that, things will get better quickly. I mean, one of the more interesting articles I read was a story of Ecuador and how it went through hyperinflation in 2000 and it was brutal. I mean, hyperinflation is just awful, right? I mean, your money becomes worthless. And yet, right after they did that, they pegged their currency to the dollar, which was relatively strong in 2000. And everything recovered incredibly quickly. I mean, it was kind of like, you know, if it's just the money that's broken, and then you fix the money and you go back to a sound money, people kind of self-organize. You know, they go and they do productive shit and they pay each other and they trade and inflation's not a problem. And, you know, systems, you know, economic systems, capitalism as an economic system, it works really well. I mean, we have the highest standard of living that's ever been known in human history as a result of capitalism. It's just a broken form of capitalism today. It's crony capitalism where the people controlling the money printer are taking advantage of the rest of us. And so once we store it back to true capitalism where the money is sound, things will get better. They'll get a lot better fast. And everyone will wonder, like, well, how could that have been so bad? Well, it was bad because we were following the wrong ideas. You know, we thought, you know, we could print and spend our way into prosperity, and you just can't do it. Yeah, you just can't do it.
Well, those are excellent closing words. Larry, how can people track you and follow your stuff?
I make a lot of noise on Twitter, just my name, at Lawrence Lepard. So you can follow me there, and I try and comment mostly negative about investment banks. I have a website called EMA2.com, Equity Management Society. I run a fund. It's accredited investors only, 200K minimum. You can go to my website, and I write a quarterly letter with my partner, David Foley. We just kind of talk about what we see going on and what we think the trends are. And it's free. It's usually about 20 pages long. If you scroll down to the bottom of the website, you can enter your email. We'll never spam you. We only send the website out four times, or the letter out four times a year. But that just gives you commentary. Go to the bottom of that, Chris, just so people can see the button. Because a lot of people come to me and they say, hey, put me on your list. I'm like, you can do it yourself. Right. Subscribe to our newsletter. Yeah.
Yep.
Press that button. Boom. Put in your email. Check that you're not a – you don't have to put in your name. Just your email. We don't care about your first, last name. Just check it. It'll ask, are you a person? You say yes. You don't even have to do a little CAPTCHA thing. And, every four times a year, we'll send you our best thoughts on investing. So – that's it. And the other thing I would say, obviously, I'm just because I think it's a good tool for helping fellow citizens understand what's going on and why it's broken, how we can fix it. This is the book. It's called The Big Print, What Happened to America, How Sound Money Will Fix It. It's no publisher has touched it. Not a surprise. It's on Amazon. It's in hard copy, paperback, Kindle, and audio. And if you can't afford it, send me an email and I'll try and figure out a way to get you a discounted version of it. So, because I really want the word to be spread around, because the sooner we get everybody to understand what the problem is, the sooner we'll have a sound money movement and the sooner we'll return to a system of sound money. And that will truly make America great again. There'll be other things as well. But in my opinion, this is probably the most critical. So
I agree 100%. So I support that entirely. EMA2, that's the number 2.com, and it's Lepard, L-E-P-A-R-D, Lawrence Lepard on Twitter. So, Larry, thank you so much for your time today.
Well,
let's do this
you,
again
Chris.
Soon.
I always, you know, we've known each other for decades. I always enjoy talking to you, and
same.
I really love what you're doing. So let's just keep fighting this battle.